BadQuaker.com podcast. Today is Monday, May 21st, 2012, and this is podcast number 148. So a lot of things happened over the weekend. One of the things that I wanted to touch on before I get too far into the podcast is the latest greenbacker trick. Now, if you're unfamiliar with the greenbackers, let me just go through my notes on the thing first, and then I'll talk about greenbackers. The greenbackers have decided that a way to get to people, and let me just point out, the greenbackers almost entirely target libertarians and right-wing conservatives. That's their main victims, if I can put it in those terms. Because the message, the part of the message they want you to accept and that they put out in you know, publicly, that part of their message very much is in line with what many libertarians believe about money and what many conservatives believe about money. They attack the Federal Reserve and so forth. But their solution is where the problem comes in. So the greenbackers have decided to use a 12-year-old Canadian girl, a cute little girl, and she recites this speech on this super popular YouTube video where she is attacking the powers that be in their abuse of the monetary system. And the vast majority of what she's saying is true. That's what the greenbackers do. The greenbackers take all the details of a problem, point out the details of the problem, and then offer you a bigger problem to solve the problem with. So if we compare it to, let's say there's a person who has had a horrible accident and their leg has been ripped off at the knee. And so they're bleeding profusely from the leg. And so the greenbacker will look at this and say, oh, this is terrible. This person has had their leg ripped off. Please notice how obvious the problem is here. The person has lost their leg. They're bleeding profusely. We have to stop this blood flow. All right, well, that's obvious. You know, attacking the Federal Reserve and attacking fractional reserve banking, that's obvious. Of course, that's a problem. So what is the solution that the greenbacker offers? Well, we're going to stab a big giant knife into the chest of this person until the blood flow stops. Wouldn't that be great? It'll work. It'll definitely work. Yeah, it'll work. Yeah, that's your greenbacker solution to having a leg ripped off, is to stab him in the chest enough times until there's no blood flow left. Well, okay, so in the situation with this Canadian YouTube video with the little 12-year-old girl, she says all the right things to tug at the heartstrings of all the right-wingers and of all the libertarians who are not aware of what greenbackers are and what they're doing. She says all the right words. She has all the right facial features. She does a really good job of explaining what the problem is with the central bankers and their, you know, all their little mess that they've created. And then what she offers is socialism, because that's what greenbackers offer as the solution, socialism. Now, would we accept if Pol Pot or Mao Zedong or Stalin, if they were to have, you know, if they were still around, they're all three dead, fortunately, but if we were in their day and they were presenting on YouTube a little 12-year-old girl from Canada saying, oh, here's the problems with the... And lays all the problems out and then offers you socialism, would you accept Pol Pot because a 12-year-old girl told you about it? Oh, but look how cute she is. Look how she talks. Oh, isn't that cute? It must be good because a little kid is doing it. No. Socialism is socialism. It doesn't matter how you dress it up. It doesn't matter if you teach children to say speeches. This reminds me of, what was his name? Charlie Chaplin. Charlie Chaplin was a communist in the 1920s and 1930s. He was very openly a communist. He made no effort to hide that whatsoever. And when his activism and his, actually, and his charges of child abuse as well, when they got to a certain level of public awareness, and his embracing of communism began to be cumbersome to the Franklin Roosevelt administration, the Roosevelt administration pulled strings and got him barred from coming into the U.S. So in response to that, he made a movie. This is Charlie Chaplin again. He made a movie supposedly set in New York City, but at the time he was not allowed to come into the U.S. because he was a communist. It, right or wrong is not the point. That's just the fact of what it was. So he made almost the entire movie in London in a movie studio made to look like they were shooting in New York City. And one of the key points in the movie is this long, horrible speech that Charlie Chaplin's son gives. Now, in the movie, the Charlie Chaplin's son plays, I believe he plays an orphan that Charlie Chaplin is trying to help. But in reality, it was Charlie Chaplin's son. And so Charlie Chaplin's son stands there and gives this long-winded communist speech. And, you know, under the guise that we'll accept it because it's coming from a little kid, and how can a little kid be corrupt or evil? Well, kids repeat whatever you teach them. And that's what this Canadian little girl in this Greenbacker YouTube video is doing. She's just repeating what she's been told, and she does a very good job of it. She actually does a better job than Charlie Chaplin's son. Charlie Chaplin's son came off mechanical and angry, but this little girl pulls it off really well. But no matter what, you're being fed socialism, whether it's Charlie Chaplin's communist version of socialism or whether it's the Greenbackers' version of socialism, it's still socialism. Look, when you have the government in control of the means of production. That is what socialism is. That is the most specific definition for socialism. Central planning of the economy is the hallmark of socialism. And when the government is in control of the money supply, is the means of production. That's the number one aspect of the means of production. So when the government is in control of the means of production, you have socialism. Now, in the situation we have currently with a Federal Reserve and with fractional reserve banks that are protected by the government, that's fascism. You have a marriage between private corporations and the federal government in the managing of the means of production. That's fascism. And so the Greenbackers come to us and point out all the problems with the fascism. They say, oh, look, this is terrible because they use the Federal Reserve to rip us off and they use these central banks to rob us. Yes, they do. That's correct. So what's the solution? Well, we're going to give all that control over to the federal government. We're going to take the means of production out of the control of these corporations that are in bed with government. We're going to take the control out of their hands and put it in the hands of politicians. Oh, genius. We're going to trade one kind of socialism for another. We're going to swap our fascist system for an incoming communist system. Well, wouldn't that just be happy? Well, won't we all just be joyous in the streets? We're laying here bleeding to death as it is, our economy, because of the fascist central banking that we currently have. And you want to stab us in the chest with communism until all the blood is drained out? Won't that be great? Okay, so let me get back and get down to an actual description of what Greenbackers want. And what this little girl says very clearly in the video. Here's the Greenbacker argument. The Greenbacker argument says central banking is bad. Federal Reserve, where the central banking is controlled by a Federal Reserve, and whatever you want to call it, at different times and in different countries it's called different things, but either way we're talking about central banking. And the argument is that it's bad because you're taking money production and putting it in the hands of a very small group of people and then expecting them not to just print up a lot of money and make themselves rich. Well, it's ridiculous from its onset, and yet that's the system we have. Okay, so the greenbackers point out that obvious thing. And then what do they want to replace it with? Do they want to replace it with a free market? No, not at all. Do they want to replace the current fascist system that we have with allowing the market to decide what money is and how much money there should be and actually allowing a free market? No, that's the furthest thing from the greenbacker desire. The greenbacker wants to take all the power of money production and the control of the economy and put that into the hands of politicians, whether that be a parliament in one country or a Senate or a House of Representatives or whatever. It varies to each different country that they're trying to sell their socialist plan to. But that's it, essentially. It's making a central bank out of the government. Now, that's what that little girl in this little video, the little Canadian girl, that is clearly what she advocates. This is socialism. You want to jump out of one form of socialism and jump into another form of socialism and then expect it to work? Well, if the purpose is to get the body to, if the purpose is to get the person to stop bleeding, then sure, you can poke enough holes in their chest and eventually they'll stop bleeding, if that's what you want. But I don't want that. I don't want to swap one kind of socialism for another. Let's reject the greenbackers, and let's recognize when they bring us these, this is not even a high-level production. You know, lots of times I rail against the high-level, slick productions that the different organizations bring to us. But this is a very, a very low-end, very down-homey type. Well, that's kind of the, that's one of the ways the greenbackers work. They pretend to be one of us, and then they slip a knife into your gizzard in the middle of it. So anyway, so that's my little rant about the 12-year-old girl and her little cuteness and at the same time handing you socialism. And libertarians right and left are buying this. They're making the video go viral. They're bragging about it. Oh, isn't this great? Even a little girl can recognize the problem. Ay. So if you're a new listener and you're wondering why I'm so upset about a greenbacker video or the greenbackers in general, it's because last fall there was a wave of this greenbacker stuff that came into the libertarian movement, and I don't know how many podcasts I spent talking about it, and every time I would think, okay, now I'm all done talking about it, then something new would come from the greenbackers, or I'd get a wave of emails saying, yeah, but they're not socialists, they want to stop the Federal Reserve. I actually had people writing me emails saying, well, don't you understand about the Federal Reserve? Let me explain to you about the Federal Reserve. I understand the Federal Reserve. It's not the point. I'm not saying we should have a Federal Reserve. I'm not saying that using the person with the torn-off leg, I'm not saying the torn-off leg is good. I'm saying poking holes in his chest is not going to make the answer and it's not going to make the situation better. The Federal Reserve is essentially, an organization of thieves that our government and other governments, as they accept central banking, so I shouldn't really say our government, I don't have any control over the thing, they're just the robbers that happen to be robbing the geographical area that I happen to have been born in. But anyway, I don't have any love at all for the Federal Reserve. I'm not defending the Federal Reserve in any way. What I'm saying is to swap one form of socialism for another form of socialism and then pretend like we're libertarians while we're doing it, it just frustrates me to no end. And for people to not be able to understand, so many people can only see, well, it's this or it's that. It's got to be left or it's right. It's either the liberals or it's the conservatives. And that whole way of thinking is so wrong. Because there's a wide variety of different options on all these things, and socialism will blend itself or change itself in a variety of different ways in order to hook you in and bring you in. But anytime the means of production are centrally planned, whether that's by a cult leader, or whether that's by the force of a gang, or whether it's if that gang grows big enough to become a government, it doesn't matter. When the means of production are centrally planned, you have socialism, and the primary means of production is money. So what is the libertarian solution? What is the correct libertarian way of looking at this. Well, you know, please, Mises is right there. Rothbard has written so much on this. The free market can decide what money is. I'm not saying you have to have a gold standard. That's the other thing that the greenbackers will throw at you. They will try to say that you're either with them or you're for the Federal Reserve. And if you point out, I'm not for the Federal Reserve, and I'm not for your version of socialism either, then they'll throw it in your face. Well, then you're a gold bug. Or they'll try to say, and somehow they'll try to infer that all you want is a gold standard. Well, I don't care what the standard is. I don't care what backs money in any way. The market can decide all that on its own. Very often through history, gold has been shown to be the best system for a number of reasons. But that may not be this case going into the future. It may be something like bitcoins, or it may be something entirely different. But the fact is, if you start to plan it in any way, and you begin to bring control, human control, backed by force, then you do not have a free market. And that's what the greenbackers are pushing. They're pushing laws that force the government to the government money to be accepted as the only thing that can be used in the market. And that's central planning. That's all that is. So the market can decide what money is. If the market decides gold, then it's gold. If the market decides silver, it's silver. If the market decides bitcoins, it's bitcoins. If the market decides it's rotted banana peels, then that's what money will be. You have to let the market decide. That's what a capitalist does. A capitalist believes that the market will correct itself if you just leave it alone. And that's not what a greenbacker is. And when these people bring their, you know, I kind of wandered there for a second. So I went over this and over this last fall, and each time I did, someone would say, "Well, you need to learn about the Federal Reserve," and they would think that I was supporting the Federal Reserve. I'm not supporting the Federal Reserve. I'm not saying it's good to have your leg chopped off. What I'm saying is the greenbackers are just more of the problem. They're more statists, they're more socialists, and they're just using tricks and lies, and they openly lie. One of the worst of the greenbacker propaganda things was this Secret of Oz video. And a lot of libertarians just jumped all over that thing. And yet, it's just packed full of lies. I think I listened to the first 15 minutes and documented something like 17 lies or something like that in the first 15 minutes. And there's a whole nother podcast just on that topic, so I'm not going to go into it, into the whole thing. But that's what they do. They will openly and blatantly lie and lie and lie. And libertarians believe this just because they keep saying it over and over. Very frustrating. Very, very frustrating. Basic stuff, folks. Basic stuff. Means of production. Socialism. Controlling the means of production. That's socialism. It's very basic stuff. Now, since I've ranted on that now, it should have been a 2-minute topic, and I've spent almost 20 minutes talking about it. I want to shift a little bit and talk about the NATO summits that are going on in Chicago right now and all the protesting and so forth. The right-wing leaning people, and that includes right-wing leaning libertarians, but also conservatives and others that I see, are very upset that all these, you know, hippies, all these leftists, all these commies, all these wackos are coming out in Chicago and protesting the NATO summit. Here's the problem with that. First off, all you have to do is look at the pictures, and sure, there are some left wing, there are some hippies, there are some, you know, some communist nuts down there, but there's just too many people out there for all of them to be the left wing nuts like that. There's way too many people showing up to, and it's not just in Chicago. There's simultaneously, there are marches going on in a lot of different cities. And if you look at the pictures, there's a wide variety of people in there. And some of them, yes, are left wings. Some of them are hippies. Some of them are carrying ridiculous communist-based signs. You know, that's true. But the bigger picture is there's a lot of people upset about it. And people on right-wing conservatives and right-leaning libertarians need to realize that NATO was something that just a few years ago conservatives did not like at all. During the Bill Clinton years, when Bill Clinton was having U.S. military change their uniform and don NATO badges and NATO, the word escapes me, but NATO symbolism on their uniforms and NATO hats and NATO helmets and things like this. When that started taking place, people on the right were outraged at Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton is trying to, you know, bring this whole UN type of a thing into the U.S. military, and there were right wing leaning soldiers who protested in different ways, and there were right wing leaning veterans who took their medals and threw them at the White House, and there was all this fuss because Clinton was using NATO commanders. And the U.S. military was under the control of NATO commanders. And this really upset the right wing. Well, now here's NATO having a summit in Chicago, and right wing people are it's like they're supporting NATO or something. The traditional conservative right wing position has not been to support NATO. Now, NATO back in like the 50s and the 60s was there to try to keep the Soviet Union in check. And unfortunately, the right wing people from the 30s and 40s, a good portion of them folded up their morals and folded up their position that they had taken right along, and they allowed themselves to be so afraid of the Soviet Union that they accepted the temporary evilness of NATO. Because they felt like they had to, because they were so afraid of the Soviet Union. All the time, the Soviet Union was being propped up by American aid. That's pretty much the only way that they were able to have enough bread to feed their people, was because of all the U.S. aid going into the Soviet Union. And at the same time, these people, these right-wing people, were accepting the left-wing's argument that we needed a NATO and we needed to be involved in the UN and we needed all these things to try it because otherwise the evil Soviet Union would take over the world. Now, at the time, there were people like Murray Rothbard and there were people like Ludwig von Mises who were pointing out that the Soviet system cannot last. The Soviet system is self-destructive. Any kind of socialism like that is not self-supporting. And if we just pull out our support from the Soviet Union, stop giving them wheat, stop sending them free rice, stop controlling the market prices on food and then selling it to them at discounted prices. If the U.S. would stop doing those things, the Soviet Union would run out of money and die very quickly. Now, this argument was made for years by Austrian economists, Hayek and others, and yet the right wing, in their tendency towards waving their pistols around and wanting to shoot somebody, were so afraid that the Soviet Union was a threat to us. All they could see is, well, the Soviet Union has the bomb. They have the bomb. Yeah, and we have like 10 times more and better ways of delivering them. And besides that, they never bombed anybody. The U.S. did. And yet, we were supposed to be in fear of the Soviet Union all those years. And then when it really gets down to brass tacks, the Soviet Union runs out of money and collapses. And somehow we're supposed to believe that was because of our tendencies towards socialism during the 1980s. Because the United States went whole hog into socialism at a time when it was supposedly being more and more conservative, and yet what it actually was doing was going right into massive spending, massive military buildup, all the things that are indicative of fascism-type socialism. The U.S. went into that whole hog in the 80s, and as the U.S. did that, the Soviet Union ran into its natural barriers that prevent any socialist system from succeeding, which is, economics. And so as the Soviet Union collapsed economically, the U.S. went headlong into the same kind of a process that had destroyed the Soviet Union. It's really amazing. And then somehow the U.S. gets credit. An American president gets credit for taking down the Soviet Union. No, the Soviet Union collapsed because it was economically unstable from its very beginning. And the only thing that kept it propped up ever was support from the West. Okay, anyway, so it's ridiculous for right-wing people today to look at NATO and say, well, that's a good thing. Because just a few years ago, the right wing hated NATO. And now here they are, you know, with all these people marching in protest, and the right wing people are looking down at the protesters because somehow they're what, un-American? Because they want an independent American military. They don't want to be bound in agreements to NATO with the U.S. troops under the foot of NATO. How is it that the same conservative people who were upset about Bill Clinton and his ties with the UN and with NATO, and now Barack Obama says that he can go to war anytime he wants as long as he has NATO backing, and that's exactly what happened in Libya, and the right wing is just like, yeah, we're good with that, as long as you're killing them brown people that funny stuff on their head. Yeah, and that's really what it is about, isn't it? They wrap a thing around their head and their skin's darker than yours, so you're good with the U.S. killing them. Is that really what it's about? If that's not true, if that's not the case, if that's not what conservatives are thinking, then I'd really like to know what they are thinking, because that's certainly what it appears. It appears as though it's okay to be married into NATO as long as NATO's killing brown people in North Africa and throughout the Middle East. We just don't want them killing Europeans. I mean, that's what it sounds like, because that's what was happening with Clinton and NATO, and now we can overlook it with Obama. So, you know, I don't understand how the right wing is looking down their nose at the protesters in Chicago. But now let me point this out. When large groups of people come together in a city like what's going on in Chicago, you get large groups of people in there to protest, and what you actually do is you feed the tendencies of the worst of those cops. It's what they live for. It's what they've waited for their whole lives. They can do what they always wanted to do. They can be the bullies that they always wanted to be now. Because what are they doing? They're saving the world from these dirty hippies. They can beat the dirty hippies. They can kill them if necessary. They can do anything they want. I'm talking about the very worst of the cops. Not good cops. The very worst of the cops, and Chicago has plenty. If there's a police force anywhere in the world that doesn't have any good cops left, it would either be New York City, Chicago, or Los Angeles. But Chicago is definitely up there on the list. So you're taking some of the worst cops in the world, and you're giving them an excuse to beat people. Now, that's what the protesters are doing. I'm not saying don't protest, but I'm saying that all the risks that you're taking, I don't know that it placed in a balance of what's the good that comes out of it and what's the bad that comes out of it. I don't know how that would come out. But I know this from an individual personal basis. There's no possible way I would go to I don't care how much I hated NATO. I would not go to Chicago and be in the middle of those protests for several reasons. One of which, it's going to feed the worst aspects of the cops. And it's going to push them towards more and more tendencies toward violence. 6 months from now, those cops are going to be more violent with the regular people walking around in Chicago than they were 6 months ago. And not only that, the few good cops that are left, or the borderline cops that are left, this kind of activity teaches them it pushes them into the bad camp of bad cops. It pushes them towards that. It rewards the worst possible behavior. So that's really what's happening with this protest, is that you're training the cops to be even worse than they already are. You're justifying in their minds this horrible brutality that they're putting on people. And now, is there good aspects of it too? Well, yeah, there is good aspects of the marches, and there is good aspects of the cops even turning worse and worse. Because as all these things happen, it opens more and more people's eyes as to the really, like Stefan Molyneux likes to say, the gun in the room. because that's really what we're talking about here. The state exists by brute force. If it weren't for the fact that the state exists by brute force, the cops wouldn't need to go down there and bust heads. That's why the cops are there, because the state exists by brute force. It can't allow all those people to come out and express their hatred toward NATO and towards all the stuff that NATO's doing. The state can't allow that because, you know, that would mean that that there's a way to do things without the brutality of the state, and the state can't tolerate that kind of openness and truth. So, are the protests doing any good? Well, in a very sick way, they are, because they're teaching the state to be meaner, and they're teaching people to look at how mean the state is. So it becomes harder and harder to close your eyes and pretend that the state is just real good and they're only there to help us and build us roads and help the elderly and do all those good things that we know we love the state to do. Well, all that's a lie. The state's here to bust your head. The state's here to take your wealth. And if you don't want to give it up, they'll bust your head. And if you do give it up but you don't bow properly, they'll bust your head. That's what the state's here to do. The state is here to rob people and gain power. That's what the state does. That's the only thing it does with any kind of efficiency. And any other service that the state might produce on the side is strictly, it's secondary to the purpose of the state. All right. So let's break for a commercial. And when I come back, I will try to go in a different direction and not talk about NATO. How would you like to support BadQuaker.com and get something nice for yourself at the same time? I want to tell you about Survival Gear Bags. It's run by my friend Kelly, who believes in and adheres to the non-aggression principle. Kelly's customers know him for his great customer service and his personal touch, because Kelly handles all customer service himself. The main focus of Survival Gear Bags is to allow you to build your own custom emergency kits with quality gear. Now, I know this because I bought my bug-out bag from Survival Gear Bags over 2 years ago, and I've gone all over the country with it by my side. And you can rest assured that the prices will always be the best they can be at Survival Gear Bags. And if you use the link from BadQuaker.com, they'll probably throw in something for free for you with your order. Now, how do you do this? Well, it's simple. You go to BadQuaker.com. On the right side of the page, click on the picture of the backpack. Then look around at Survival Gear Bags and find the stuff you want. You'll help BadQuaker.com, and you'll support a merchant that's one of us. Now, I want to tell you about another way you can support BadQuaker.com and get something really cool at the same time. Shire Silver. Shire Silver is the proud seller of silver and gold trade cards. Shire Silver believes that silver and gold trade cards will show the world a better way to save, spend, and share precious metals. So what are silver and gold trade cards? There are specific weights of gold and silver laminated inside credit card-sized tradable cards. They're a handy and affordable way to trade precious metals. These cards received nationwide recognition when they were widely used as barter at the New Hampshire Porcupine Festival. You want a beer and a hot dog? Hand them a Shire Silver 5 card and get a Shire Silver 1 spot back as change. So again, what do? Well, you go to BadQuaker.com. On the right side, just below the backpack, you'll see the Shire Silver trade cards. Click on those cards and then check out Shire Silver's site. Be sure and watch Ron's video that's right there on the main page. And then swap some of those ridiculous Federal Reserve notes for something of real value. Something you can keep, trade, or give as the coolest gift ever. But be sure and use the link from BadQuaker.com. Thanks, folks. Okay, thanks for sticking with me through the commercial. I wanted to recap something that I have been talking about last week, and I think it's fairly important because of whose voice said these words to begin with. Last week, one of the Fox News people, Andrew Napolitano, the so-called judge, he basically said that whoever the first person is who shoots down a drone that's, you know, over their backyard or looking at their children or something like this, some kind of statement like that, whoever that first person is will be an American hero for shooting down a drone. And I was just really dumbfounded that how could somebody who's supposedly on our side, one of us in the libertarian camp. How can somebody like that say something so stupid in such a public way? And, you know, there's many, many things that Andrew Napolitano has gotten right. He's come a long way in the last 10 years from being an entirely statist judge to being extremely libertarian to being right on the verge of being an anarcho-capitalist. He's come a long way. And for him to say something so idiotic as to encourage the shooting at a government flying vehicle is just it's amazing. Anyway, so he says this about shooting down a drone. Now, and my immediate reaction was, you shoot at a government vehicle of any kind, you do that, and you're dead. They will kill you. And if you want to be a martyr, you know, that's a good way to do it. You go ahead and just shoot at a drone, and they'll kill you, and you'll be a martyr. And what good will that be for your children? Because that was part of the thing he said that Napolitano said about. Essentially, he's inferring that the person is protecting their children from this drone. Well, how can you protect your children if you're dead? You can't. So becoming a martyr over the drones is stupid, and to advocate it is stupid, and shooting at a government vehicle is suicide. And you can't really look at it any other way. Now, in addition to that, in addition to it, from a tactical point of view, it's stupid. Shooting at a drone is stupid. But in addition to the tactical point of view, there is a moral point of view as well, and that is, well, some people will say, you're not violating the zero aggression principle if you're acting in self-defense. Okay, this is true. So then let's take this a step further. So if the drone is infringing on you by violating your privacy and taking photographs in your backyard, then you can defend yourself morally. You can defend yourself and shoot the thing down. Well, possibly you can make that argument. But you have to fall back to the bigger principle about it. You could use that same argument as an excuse to attack the government on any level. But realize that once you decide that using violence against the government is a good idea, then you've opened the floodgates to feel the full repercussion of the state when you do that. So, however morally, you may find a way to justify that kind of behavior. In the long run, is it morally best to do something that you know is going to cause your children to be orphans? You know, is that really morally the best choice? Even if you can make an argument that it's self-defense, or even if you can make the argument that you're protecting your property, can you still make the argument that abandoning your family forever because you're dead is the best thing to do morally on their behalf? I think we all have a certain moral responsibility, not only to protect our family and our property, but to stay with them as long as possible and continue guiding them and protecting them on a day-to-day basis. And you can't do that if you martyred yourself, if you committed suicide by shooting at a government vehicle. You know, you're dead. You're gone. You can't protect them from anything. And that's exactly what will happen if somebody starts shooting at drones. So what do we do? Do we do nothing? Do we do nothing? No. No. But you don't commit suicide either. There's more than the two things. Okay, so what can we do? Well, here's the deal. And I've said this over and over and over and over and over. You do not fight your enemy using the weapons of your enemy's choice on the battlefield that your enemy chooses at the time that your enemy chooses. If you fight on those terms, you lose. So what do you want to do? You want to fight your enemy using a weapon that your enemy has no resistance to. And you want to fight your enemy on the battlefield of your choice. And you want to do that at your convenience, not the enemy's convenience. So what does that mean from a libertarian point of view? Well, the state is an expert at using things like violence and lies and theft. So you have to avoid those weapons. Those are the weapons of the state. Those are the methods of the state. Violence, lies, and theft. So if violence, lies, and theft are the perfected methods of the state, then you must use peaceful exchange. Peaceful exchange is the opposite of violence and theft. You must use peaceful exchange, and you must use the truth. The truth is the opposite of lies. So therefore, if you're doing battle, and where's the battlefield? Where is this all going to take place? Well, if you're doing the battlefield on city streets, government buildings, hidden away in a religious compound, a hidden bunker in the mountains, or what the government is going to call a crack house, or any other drug related situation, if the government can put any terrorist, if they can label you as a terrorist in any possible way, if they can label you as a part of the drug war, if they can label you that way, if they can claim that you have a bunker, if they can claim that you have a religious compound, if they claim that you're a threat out on the city streets or to government buildings, they've got you on their battlefield and they will win. So where is the battlefield that we can use? The battlefield is the one that is invisible to the state. And that is the underground market. The agora is invisible to the state. Now, there's some criticism towards some of the activities that people in the agora movement adhere to. And I'm not saying that everybody in any particular group is right. But what I'm saying is underground markets are the thing that the government cannot deal with. And I'm not talking about drugs. I am absolutely not talking about drugs. I'm talking about the more things we can do, the more times that we can have voluntary exchange in markets that are not visible to the government, the stronger we are and the weaker the government gets. That's the battlefield, and the battlefield of the mind. If we can bring truth into the battlefield of the mind and teach more and more people to open their eyes and see what the government is, to see that their beliefs in the state are just simply a religious fanaticism, that they believe in something that is not real. The state is not real. It only exists in their minds. And as we win that battle, and as we bring truth to people and we win that battle, that's something the government has no way to fight against, because all they have is lies. And when lies and truth confront each other, the truth wins. And when we resort to violence, when we resort to exaggerations, let's go back to the lies. When we resort to lies and exaggerations to try to get across our libertarian points, we lose. We look stupid in front of the rest of the public. I saw one of these posters on Facebook the other day, over the weekend sometime. And it was in reference to this CIA plane that actually ended up crashing with a bunch of marijuana cocaine. I can't remember. Some drug that the CIA was in the process of smuggling, and then they were busted for it. And so the poster shows this huge quantities of whatever it was, and big bundles, and it claims that there's all these, so many tons were being smuggled on this plane by the CIA. Well, there are no planes that can smuggle that kind of tonnage, and so the point being that the person who made the poster for libertarian purposes to spread the information that the CIA is actually in on the drug wars, the CIA is actually making money off of transporting drugs for drug lords. Now, that's an easily provable point that's been shown over and over and over to be the case. But instead of just going with that, they decided to put lies and exaggerations and put it out there for the public. And it makes us all look bad when they do that. So if you're going to battle the state, you have to stay away from the state's methods, violence, theft, and lies. And you have to stick with things like peaceful exchange and the truth and underground markets and underground labor, non-visible activity This is what the state has no resistance for. They can't. The state cannot understand it. The state has no understanding of a free market. The state cannot grasp these things. And the more of it that we do, the stronger we become, and the more minds are changed in our direction, and the weaker the state gets. And that's how you win. Let me shift away from that for a moment. Speaking of Facebook and speaking of pictures on Facebook, there's one of those with a picture of Bastiat, and it says, it has a quote from Bastiat, "When law and morality contradict each other, the citizen has the cruel alternative of either losing his moral sense or losing his respect for law." And what Bastiat is referring to there, and I think the translation from French doesn't really do it service. But what Bastiat is talking about there is that, you know, up until about the 1600s within the English speaking world, up until about the 1600s, law was not delegated downward from government. There were no lawmakers in government. That didn't exist. Judges and people of authority in government, the way that it was put, they discovered law, they discovered existing law, they sorted through how things had always been done and made their decisions based on that. So it was so law was a discovery process. When you were brought before a judge or a dignitary of some kind like that, the purpose of the judge was to discover whether or not you had broken the existing law. There was no lawmakers in the English-speaking world prior to the 1600s. So we created for ourselves, those of us in the English-speaking world, our ancestors actually, I wasn't there, I'm not that old, but so they created lawmakers. Now, once it actually became an official part of government to make law, then the birth of the modern state took place almost simultaneously. The state had now absorbed one more aspect of the private economy and had taken over one more part of central, had brought central planning into one more part of the economy, and that is law. And yes, law is a part of the economy. You can understand law by understanding proper economics. So what Bastiat is saying here is that once people begin taking on the authority of creating new law, then the more laws that they create, the more of a contradiction begins to exist between what is being called law and what is true law that is being actually abandoned with the abundance of new laws. So for instance, let's take, I was talking about the drug war a moment ago. Let's just take that for an example. Let's just say a person, to give an economics example. A person in their backyard without harming anyone else at all or without interacting with anyone else at all grows a few plants, and from those plants he harvests leaves, and then he takes those leaves into his house and he quietly sits in the basement of his house and he consumes those leaves by smoking them, and he attains whatever state of euphoria that they produce, and he does not go out and interact with the world and does not in any way harm anyone else. Whatever harm that, if there is any harm taking place, he's doing it to himself and to no one else. And so then he goes back out and he grows more of these plants and he harvests more of the leaves and he brings them into his basement and he consumes those, and he's not harming anyone at all. Now, that is against the law, as law exists now under the state. And so people come in, break into his home with great violence, and they throw him to the ground, and they handcuff him, and they take all of his leaves and all of his plants, and they haul him before a judge, and harsh things are said, and the guy's thrown in jail. Okay, now, you can morally look at this, and you have to come to a contradiction. Either you have to lose your respect for the law, or you have to lose your sense of morality. One or the other. Because you can't look at this hypothetical situation that I created. You can't look at this person and say what's being done to him is good. It's good for this person who is harming no one to be hauled out of their house, beaten perhaps, thrown into a cage, all of their property taken. If you look at that and say that's good, then you have abandoned morals. If you look at that and you say, well, this is clearly wrong, this is what the law has brought to us, therefore the law is flawed, well, then you lose respect for the law. And as you lose respect for these false laws that man has made, it tends to cause people in general to lose respect for all law. So therefore, as generations are born and go through their lives and die, and they're exposed more and more to stupid laws that are enforced upon them, they lose respect for all law. And as this happens generationally, people move more towards what is generally referred to as lawless behavior. That's theft and aggression and lies. You see, they're actually moving more towards behaving like the state behaves, because the state is held up to them as being the standard of what law is. And so as they lose respect for traditional law, and they see that the only alternative is brute force, then they begin to adopt the actual thing that they really in their mind should be hating, and that is aggression and violence and lies and theft. They've adopted these things because they lost their morality and they lost their sense of respect for what real law is. That's what happens when we begin to write laws, when we begin to make lawmakers out of regular people, and they begin in abundance making new laws, constantly making more laws. And whenever there's a problem, the solution is always to make a new law. It's not to go back and say, is it possible that law created this problem? Is it possible that the laws of humans have created the problem to begin with, and what we need to do is eliminate the possibility of humans making up new laws? But that never enters into the discussion. It's always what new law is going to be made to solve this problem that was caused by the government to begin with. So what Bastiat is saying in this, and I'll read that one more time as a recap on this section, when law and morality contradict each other, the citizen has the cruel alternative of either losing his moral sense or losing his respect for law. And I would contend that as he does that, he actually does both. He actually loses his moral sense and he loses his respect for law. So we wonder, well, how did society get into the mess it's in right now? Well, a lot of people are going to be telling you, well, you know, America is falling because of morality, or America is falling because of, you know, they want to blame, they want to try to say that America is collapsing because of its immorality, or America is going to collapse because of its greed, or America is following the pattern of Rome and becoming more and more corrupt, America is the problem with America is its disrespect for law. It's becoming more lawless. Well, this is what we're talking about. This is a spiral that takes place. It has nothing to do with America becoming more immoral or America becoming too greedy. What's happening in America, the steady crumbling of everything that holds America together, this is happening specifically because the nation itself is based on the state on an unstable platform. The idea that you can just continue to make laws and make laws and make laws, and that men have the right to lord over other men, this has created something that's guaranteed to fall at some point in time. I read an article over the weekend by Gary North, and around the same time, I bumped into some statements that were made about Gary North, and it really kind of threw me off. Because there's clearly something here that I don't know about. I know Gary North around the year 2000 was really big on the Y2K thing, and some of his expectations ended up being, you know, not right. But I don't really know where the Gary North hate is coming from. If somebody can fill me in on that, I'd appreciate it. I've looked around on the internet a little bit, and I can't really find an explanation for the Gary North hate. But if you know why, libertarians or anarcho-capitalists or any of us, if you know why there's this hate going towards Gary North, please drop me an email, ben@badquaker.com, and let me know where that's coming from, because I can't figure it out, and I really would like to know. But anyway, he had an article over the weekend, and he was talking specifically about how empires are guaranteed to fall by their very design. They have a cycle where they are guaranteed to fall as a part of their structure. And I'll see. Let me see how we're doing on time. Ooh, we're too close. You know, I'm not going to be able to cover the Gary North article because I am very quickly running out of time. Okay, so instead I'll just make the appeal. If you know why all this hate is being thrown at Gary North, please let me know. I don't know him personally. I've exchanged a couple emails with him over the years, but I don't have any kind of relationship with him. And I'd really like to know if there's something I'm missing in reference to this. Just drop me an email, ben@badquaker.com. Also, I try to get through my emails as quickly as possible, but they do back up on me sometimes. But if you've got any questions or comments or whatever, feel free to drop me a note, ben@badquaker.com, and I'll try to get back as quickly as I can, answer your email as quickly as I can. I was going to also read about, I was going to read Mises's story of the Master Builder. Because we have a situation here real close to where I live where construction is just going on like crazy. And they are really overbuilding what the market will support. And so I was going to go over some of the information on that. Maybe on the next podcast for tomorrow, if I can, I'll try to go over this article that I read over the weekend from Gary North that talks about empires falling. And I want to tie that at the same time to corporations, because you have the same pattern. The corporation has the same pattern as an empire, and I'll get into that in the article. And then I want to go over the commercial property bubble that's being formed right now, and you know how the commercial property bubble is going to pop. It's going to be as big or bigger than the housing bubble. There was a couple other things I wanted to talk about, too. The liberal as opposed to the conservative reactions to political statements. Like recently, Obama talked about gay marriage in sort of a positive way, and a lot of people on the left just started jumping up and down with joy, and people on the right started jumping up and down with anger. And what both sides don't realize is that, you know, those are all just empty words that Obama's saying in election year, and that's all he's doing. He's not doing anything for the radical left-wingers who want him to make, gay marriage legal. And he's not doing anything. He's not doing anything so the people on the right should not be jumping up and down with anger just because he said some words. He's not going to do anything. He's not going to make any kind of actual action in any way on that topic because, you know, honestly, he doesn't care. He's just using these words in a election year to pander to the hard left of his party. And right-wing people can't seem to see that. And I'm not saying this to support or denounce Obama. He's just another, you know, he's another tax feeder, just like Romney or just like anybody else who's trying to get themselves elected to lord over other people. So, you know, okay. So I better wrap that up or else I'm going to go into a Ron Paul rant. And we all know we don't want that to happen, do we? Okay, so folks, thank you very much for listening to the podcast today. Be sure and get over to badquaker.com and look around. We are in the process of upgrading the website. So any input you might, if there's something you want to see on the website, drop an email either to me, ben@badquaker.com, or you can email badquaker@badquaker.com, and that goes into the group where all of us can get to it, all the admin and all of us that are involved at badquaker.com. So drop us, if you have suggestions about the website, drop us a note, and we will be sure and take that into consideration. So, for more on liberty, the zero aggression principle, and property rights, go to badquaker.com, and thank you very much for listening, folks.